Welcome to the 171st episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. Welcome. Hope you're having a great summer. So this is the season of mangoes in Florida. Florida has the most varieties of mangoes of any place else in the world. And luckily, I'm living in a region that really has a lot of mangoes growing. And last week, I attended a mango tasting. And I have to give a shout out to Matthew Reese, who hosted it. Thank you very much. He had an expert come from the other coast as well to talk about mangoes. And Matthew hosts a website, if you're interested, called What's Ripening in Florida. I should have Matthew on the podcast. It's a good idea. But we tasted a variety of mangoes. I found out that the earliest mango in Florida was called a turpentine. It was actually small. And the reason why Florida has so many varieties of mangoes is that there's been a lot of plantings and a lot of kind of crossbreeding. So the microbes from mango tree to mango tree actually are part of the formation of new and different varieties. So we tasted not only the turpentine, which if you've got mangoes in the store, typically they're Kent's. Sometimes you can get the honey mangoes that are coming from Costa Rica that are more golden, but the Kents tend to be very fibrous. Some people are turned off by them because if they're not just the right ripening, they can be maybe a little bit on the tart side or a little too fibrous for people. But and the turpentine is a very small yellow mango that's fairly fibrous, but very, very sweet. We also tasted one of my favorites called the Karen Michelle. They had ones called Fruit Punch, Lemon Drop, Julia, Pink, Pinot Colado, Sherbert Mango, and Edwards Mango, and Hayden was also one of my favorites. And we found out our neighbor actually has a Stringless Peach Mango variety as well as a Hayden variety. So that was really cool to be able to identify what mangoes that are growing locally in the streets. But it's fun to, you know, when we're on bike rides, to kind of identify the different mangoes based on their shape, their size, the color. And of course, when you cut them, sometimes they're almost a lemon yellow, all the way down to a very orange color. So it's very, very fascinating. And we had a great time tasting mangoes. I've collected a lot of mangoes, so I'm eating two or three mangoes a day at this point. And it really, really good. And mangoes are a good source of vitamin A, folate, B6, vitamin C, a whole host of antioxidants, and given, you know, the yellow and the orange color, a lot of beta carotens. They also have 3 grams of fiber, so it's a great fiber source. Typically, you know, in my nutrition class, I talk about cutting a mango, and maybe you've seen most people cut a mango. It's, you know, mango is an oblong fruit, and it has a large seed in the middle. And if you cut down one side and then the other side, you have 2 halves, and you can kind of checkerboard it and scoop it out with a spoon. And that's traditionally the way I have cut a mango. But I watched this mango expert. He takes, if you roll a mango on the table, you'll see it'll lay down. It'll roll with the seed being perpendicular, or I'm sorry, the seed will be horizontal to the table. So if you take that seed and keep it horizontal and have one half in your palm and then actually take the skin off of the other half, you can then checkerboard it and cut that off and then turn it over and peel it the other way. And you can actually get a little bit more fruit off of it. And I found it's even more helpful for the more fibrous mangoes to really get down to that seed. And if you're interested in planting a mango, you have to pry open that clamshell sort of covering over the seed, and then you'll see the embryo inside. And you can actually put that in a wet paper towel and put it in a Ziploc for a week, and it'll actually sprout. So if you live in a place where you can, that's tropic climate, and you want to plant a mango, that's a good way. You're not going to have fruit for longer than if you buy a mango tree, obviously, but you can grow your own mango trees that way. So that's been, you know, what we've been into as far as fruit goes. And then as far as training goes, again, Ironman Chattanooga, September the 30th is in the horizon. And I've been experimenting with different different sources of food on the run and the ride. And obviously, since it's fruit season here in Florida, last week I did watermelon, maple syrup, and a little bit of salt for a run, and I really like that. I just put the watermelon in the Vitamix and then dumped it into a little hydration flask. So that worked out really good. You know, I don't know in reality how good that would be, is, you know, to take to a race. So I'm going to experiment with different juices. The reason why I'm trying to stay away from the, you know, more traditional packaged things is I want to get more natural. I want to get the antioxidants and vitamin C, the phytonutrients associated with the fresh juices. So watermelon, a lot of vitamin C. You know, Dr. Greger looked at recovery with an article with recovery in watermelon, and, you know, it showed that it does improve muscle recovery after workout. I've been doing that for a couple years. I think it does. So, you know, study of one from here. Dr. Greger has study of more. The next day, didn't have any more watermelon, so went with mango and papaya juice puree with a little maple syrup and salt. That worked out good. We did that on the bike. This week, I'm going to go with an orange juice, an organic, fresh squeezed orange juice and maple syrup and salt. That'll be a little something easier to come by. I could buy some organic orange juice that's just orange juice if I was traveling, and that might work. Could also freeze it the night before to see if that works. So I'm still, you know, playing around with it. It's nice to train on. At least I'll be able to train on some more nutritious things, even if I don't get to race on it, perhaps. So that's, you know, as far as the nutrition aspects of things, what I've been doing. I've also been riding my bike, watching the Tour de France. I don't know if any of you are cyclists, but we're in the second week of starting the second week of the Tour de France. It's day 7, I believe. And so that's really fun to watch them. So I, you know, get on my Wahoo trainer. I put the Zwift app up on my phone, and I put the Tour de France on the TV, and it's pretty entertaining, so that you can get through the time a little bit quicker on a trainer. So I have enjoyed that. So, and I had a couple of what the fork moments. So I thought, since I have a what the fork moment, and I usually include my daughter, Addie Delaney Minerich, my registered dietitian, I thought I'd give her a shout out and bring her on the podcast for a quick what the fork moment. So let's tune in with Addie. Well, we're going to have Addie Minerich on for a what the fork moment today, because I was at the service station. I won't say what kind of a service station, but it was one of these service stations that has, you know, all the food inside. And I was pumping my gas, because I never go inside. I always pump get my gas at the pump and then go on. And I'm watching this steady stream of traffic in and out of the in the service station where they sell the food and everything. And on my gas pump, there was this thing called Siptopia. And they had all these different sugary drinks that you can get if you go inside. Now, they did advertise salads, but I didn't see anybody coming out with salads. I saw people coming out with these 64 of these giant drinks. And one of the drinks that they advertised was actually a Jolly Rancher smoothie. And I just like, oh my goodness, how much sugar is in those things? And people are just going in, and they get tempted once they go in there, and they come out with these things. And kids come out with these things. So in the middle of the day, between meals, people are getting this giant sugar load. So I said, what the fork? So then I decided to call my registered dietitian, Addie. So, hello, Addie.
Hello. Good morning. And what the fork? We have a couple today.
Yes, we do.
Just the tip of the iceberg of the what the fork moment, folks. So sit down, strap in, and enjoy.
And we don't want to be negative about things, but it's just, you know, you just get tripped up. You're trying to do well, and you go to the gas station to try to get gas, and there are all these, you're bombarded with, even there's sound at the gas station now telling you to come in and get these crazy, crazy drinks. And of course, kids see them, and, you know, the next thing you know, you want to, you know, quiet down the child, so you get them these sugary drinks. There's nothing in there healthy. So what could you do instead?
So when you see these flavors, we're going to talk about how to kind of mimic them with whole food varieties, because that's what they are advertising, is that, you know, the watermelon, Jolly Ranchers, the cherry, the green apple, but, you know, they have no fruit content in them whatsoever, filled with high fructose corn syrup and additives, and they attract parents and kids with the brightly colored actual, like, smoothie. That's what triggers, you know, your eye. Advertisers and marketers within the food industry have all of these ways of doing that. But you can get this in a healthier way that will not have your children addicted to these fake flavors, and they will actually be less likely to be picky eaters if they're eating these whole foods. So, for instance, let's start with the watermelon Jolly Rancher flavor. You could just do watermelon and ice in a smoothie. If you wanted to make it a little bit sweeter, you could even add some strawberries to it to kind of really make that red pigment pop. You know, for hydration in the summertime, adding a little bit even of coconut water to that and some ice would be a good option. You know, then they have the green apple. That's kind of simple. You know, and that one would be easy even to add in a little bit of spinach with some green apple and maybe some pineapple to give it a little bit of that really tart citrus flavor. That could be an option with some ice. And then another fun, especially summertime, hydration's huge, so these can serve as another form of hydration. But to do the cherry, dark cherries, and the lighter cherries are actually in season right now, but you can get them all year round in the frozen food section of their grocery store, and throwing those in with, you know, you could do some other berries as well, but really, you know, going heavy on the cherries and, you know, the ice, and having like a really refreshing smoothie, slushy type, but it's made out of the whole food. So you're exposing those young taste buds to the actual flavors of these foods, and you can have it as well. And everybody in the family can enjoy these healthier options that are just a kind of a fun way to spruce up your hydration for the summer.
Yeah, and even nutritionfacts.org, I kind of laughed because Dr. Greger posted a video on you get recovery from exercise through watermelon. And that's something that we've been doing for quite some time. We come in from bikes or run and do watermelon smoothies with cherry. But watermelon green apple cherries, watermelon papaya cherries, a pina colada type banana, mangoes, you know, and pineapples. It's mango mania season here in Florida, like I talked about before. So I've been putting mangoes with my watermelon smoothies as hydration. I've even, you know, as I talked to earlier, you know, about, you know, taking the watermelon on the run, so to speak, watermelon juice. But these smoothies, it's much better to do them with the real fruit. And watermelon's fairly, you know, a cup of watermelon is not high in calories. When you put them in blender, you still have some of the fiber, so it's a great treat for kids. And again, the more ice you put in it, the more, you know, ice cream-like, slushy type that you get. And you could even, you know, if you wanted to have something bubbly, like, you know, when they do the Slurpees, you could actually do some carbonated water if you wanted to add that to it. Or put that over it, so you could make it a little carbonated if you wanted to at home. But you know, I just like the plain juice myself. You know, with the watermelons and the papaya. Papaya is great for stomach issues. And again, the antioxidants, vitamin C that you get from these fruits, the recovery is just amazing. So make sure you're adding these in if you're not doing the whole fruits. But this is great to, you know, for kids, even to go if, you know, people are going swimming for the afternoon to the pool, to be able to take some of these in the cooler, just shake them up and have these as drinks as opposed to soda.
You could even do a pina colada. Talking about, you could do it with the mangoes or without, and do like some coconut water and pineapple.
Yeah,
really good.
So I mean, this is a great time of year to really have fun with fruit and stay away from all those processed foods and you know, the processed drinks and just the high fructose. There's no need for sugar in your house, you know, as with the summertime fruit that's available.
And you're not depriving anyone of this either. I hear that a lot. Well, I let them have this at least, or at least they can have this, or I don't want to take everything away. And I think it's really, we need to change the mentality of that and say, you know, we know that childhood early nutrition really sets you up for the rest of your life. It's not just something you can kick to the curb once you hit your mid-20s. You know, it's something that affects your taste buds, affects your gut microbiome, affects your immunity, it affects food aversions and relationships to food. So starting kids off young, you're doing them a huge favor when you are choosing these whole food options, and you are depriving them, yes, from diabetes, heart disease, being overweight, body image issues, obesity. So, but all of these things I think we want to protect our kids from.
Yeah. And you know, the other thing that happens, you know, I do the master swim program and I walk in the morning and the lifeguards take turns going out to the Dunkin' Donuts to come back with these big Frappuccino caramely drinks. And, you know, as opposed to the lifeguards of yesteryear or the ones we see on the movies, these lifeguards are, they're not an ideal body weight. And, a lot of it, you know, to maintain, you know, their body weight and drink these sugary drinks from Dunkin' Donuts or Starbucks, these Frappuccinos with the caramel drizzled over top of them. It's just, again, another sugary caffeinated drink with no nutrients.
So, I mean, just for example, you know, you see a lot of people go in maybe for their coffee. Again, they may have their kids with them, but I've seen, you know, a lot of adults. They say they love Starbucks, but how many people actually like coffee? You're really going in for these beverages that almost have the equivalent calories of like what a meal would be for someone. You know, much more than what a drink would be, you know, especially we don't want to get into these sugar sweetened beverages. But just for example, you know, a grande Frappuccino, their standard Frappuccino, is 430 calories with 69 grams of sugar, zero fiber. I mean, so you're getting, and 230 milligrams of sodium.
And 4 grams of sugar is the equivalent of 1 teaspoon. So that's 69 grams. So, I mean, more sugar than, you know, it's amazing.
More sugar than a recipe for a cake would call for.
Yeah. So it's just crazy. We don't think about that. And sugar is not only, and obviously it's sugar bad for your teeth. We know that, you know, sugar is directly toxic to your brain as far as causing inflammation, so it's just really and no nutrients associated with this stuff. So, you know, really beware that when you look at this stuff, you know, when I see something that's like that, I see the sugar, I see the negative effects. A lot of times you'll see people post on Facebook, oh, this looks so good. You know, I know it's bad, but it looks so good. But I think you have to change your perspective that when you see that, you see the sugar, you know, those teaspoons of sugar mounding up. You see the side effects of taking in all this sugar. You see the lack of nutrients. And then you're not tempted by it so much that, oh, this tastes good. Because not to mention, you know, the fat in some of this stuff. So it is just diabetes in a plastic container.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I want to do a little bit of a clarifying moment here, because I know most of you probably know, but the sugar that we're talking about is this processed granulated sugar. It is not, I've had some major confusion recently from new clients on, oh, well, doesn't fruit have a lot of sugar? Or what about the sugar and, you know, like carbohydrates and things like that? That is completely different. You know, glucose is what the body uses for energy, and it can get that from the carbohydrates that you eat. But the fructose, the type of sugar that is within the fruit, is one, not the same as the man-made high fructose corn syrup, and two, is not table sugar. It is much different. And when you're eating those whole foods with that, you know, quote unquote sugar being the fructose with fruit, you're also getting fiber, antioxidants, vitamins and minerals, hydration. It is not the same thing.
Yeah. So what the fork? And then I guess the last thing that I'd like to, for today, turn around on a little What the Fork episode is, you know, the money that it costs to be plant-based and choices that we make in the grocery store that can really run up your bill. And I think that, you know, a lot of what comes is that when we, you know, when we start to exit the produce aisle and we start to go into these packaged products that, you know, again, that are made to be convenience foods. And one of the things that I was asked about was a pancake mix. It was from an organic company, and it was labeled as a pancake mix, and it was buckwheat pancake mix. Well, when you turn it around, it's not all buckwheat. It's buckwheat flour plus whole wheat flour. So, well, that's not so bad, and had baking soda in it. Of course, you have to add the rest of your things. But because it's packaged together like that in a box, it's much more expensive than if you were to buy, you know, a bag of buckwheat flour or a bag of whole wheat flour. So beware of things like that that are made that are, you know, made to look like, oh, this will be easier. The only thing they did for you was add the baking soda. So you're better off, you know, adding the baking soda yourself. And of course, the recipes on the box are going to tempt you because it's like, oh, you have to add eggs and you have to add oil to this. When we know you can make pancakes, you know, by using a banana, using a flax egg. So, you know, again, don't be fooled by these processed or, you know, convenience type packaging of things. You know, because it really adds to your grocery bill.
I think, you know, especially when you're beginning your whole food plant-based journey, it is best to stick with, obviously, the whole foods produce aisle. But if you are also trying to lose weight or something of that nature, or reduce, you know, your exposure even to waffles or baked goods or things like that, one way is to have to make it yourself. And if you actually have the time and desire or need to do it for an event or something, you know, you have to go through the process of choosing those ingredients that you want. You have to make it. It's not just lickety split, let me have it. Because a lot of what I do in working with people with, you know, food addictions or, you know, not desirable food habits is slowing that process down prior to choosing those foods. When we have those convenience foods, we just have a craving, we act on it, we eat it. There's no time of preparation, there's no thought process, and it's just kind of the societal norm right now. And so it's not easy, it's a challenge, and it's, you know, it's a forced habit at first, but having to sit there and think, okay, do I actually want this? Or if there's a birthday coming up, okay, then I'm going to prepare a cake that is from, you know, the best ingredients that I can and in a quantity that is needed, not in someone else's idea of a quantity for me. So the recipe on those cupcake boxes or the recipe on the pre-made cakes or on the pancakes, that may not be what you need at that point in time. So being able to decipher what it is that you want, what it is that you need, and creating those recipes for yourself with ingredients that you have control of.
Yeah. And you know, and I think a lot of people, that, you know, the other thing that we see that can really add, you know, the marketing of some of the nut milks. You know, people's aversion to nut milks, it was kind of like the people's aversion to skim milk way back when. You know, whole milk was thicker, had that fat milk, had that fat mouth feel. And so people didn't want skim milk because they thought it was watery. And so the same thing started when almond milk came out, soy milk or rice milk, it was a bit watery. So to take kids or even adults that were drinking 2% or whole milk and put them onto almond milk that was thinner, people started to use various thickeners in the marketing so that they would have this mouthfeel of a thickener. Well, they've taken it one step further with marketing. We know that omega-3s are great for you. We need omega-3 fatty acids in our diet for a whole host of hormones and enzymatic reactions. And the best sources of omega-3s are flaxseed, hemp seeds, chia seeds, kale, pinto beans, and the like. But now some of these nut milks are actually, you know, people are saying, because they know you're going to get confused whether it's omega-3 or omega-6. So they say, get your omegas, and they're adding these omegas into nut milks.
And I think, you know, again, this has been a really teachable moment that, you know, has come up a lot for me this week in, you know, my consultations is if you are going to get something that's prepackaged, do not base your choice off of the front of the box or the package. You need to turn it around and read the truth, because advertising is not for your health. It's for the company to sell you a product. You need to turn it around and see the nutrition facts label and then also the ingredients. But the one that popped up the most, kind of, you know, going off what we're talking about is, you know, this silk almond plus cashew milk, that's their Silk Omega, a great source of ALA, a great source of omega-3 fatty acids for you. So I was like, I actually hadn't seen this product before. You know, a member brought it up to me, so I went online, because you can find all of these products and their nutrition facts label and ingredients online. And the flaxseed is coming from cold-pressed flax oil. So you're not getting, you know, if you were to add this to your oatmeal versus flaxseed plus plain almond milk to your oatmeal, you're just getting the fat. You're not getting the fire and the fiber, excuse me, and the lignans and, you know, some of the other nutrients that are within the actual flaxseed itself. And when they're saying a great source, you know, when we're, you know, working with, you know, members, you know, we're not just getting them plant-based and that's it. We want it to be the most nutrient-dense and the most balanced it can be. And we know also how important omega-3 fatty acids are for anti-inflammatory purposes and for brain health and cognitive function. So we want to make sure that you're getting a good enough source of that, and enough of that each and every single day. So I looked at, you know, how much, so a serving of this milk is a cup with 45 calories. So they're marketing it that it's low cal, but it's a great source of these omega-3s from this flax oil. Well, I looked, and the serving of the recommended dietary allowance for for omega-3s is, you know, anywhere from 1.5 to 3 grams. So that recommendation is in the unit of grams. When you're looking at the omega-3s in one cup of this milk, first flag, it's in milligrams, so smaller. It is 160 milligrams, so they can make it look like a larger percentage in each cup, but really that only comes down to 0.16 grams, so not even a single gram is in a cup. 2 tablespoons of actual flaxseed, if you were adding that to your meal, would give you about 1.6 grams. You know, and the recommendation that we give to folks is, you know, around 2 to 3 tablespoons of that ground flaxseed meal sprinkled on your, you know, your oatmeal first thing in the morning to make sure you're getting it in. So if you were just going to go off of this milk, though, you would have to drink 10 cups of this almond milk to get the equivalent omega-3 fatty acids from just eating, again, the whole food. So again, you know, everyone is like, oh, you guys don't do oils. You know, there's a purpose to that. You know, we want to get everything that we can out of it, and especially these products that are all, you know, hyped up with their advertising. You've got to read the fine print.
Plus, if you eat the ground flaxseed, you're getting some protein, and you're also getting fiber. So if the oil is just added, again, you're losing fiber. And again, the thing that Americans are most deficient on is fiber daily. So you don't want to, you know, cheat yourself by saying, well, I'll get it here or get it there, or rely on, you know, additives for things. You want to make sure you're actually eating the whole food to get what you really need. So there, what the fork for today, huh?
What the fork, but there is hope if you stick to the whole food, plant-based options. Get those colors on there, people. Beans at lunch and dinner, or, you know, lentils or some sort of like tofu, some whole grains, getting the really rich whole grains that have higher fiber content, or your potatoes and colorful veggies and fruit galore. Stick to those foods that won't lie to you like the advertisers may and usually do.
Thank you, Addie Meinerich, RDM.
Thank you, Dr. Delaney, MAMA.
All right, see ya.
Have a good one.
So I hope you enjoyed our little What the Fork episode, but you know, moving on, I'd like to talk about some, you know, studies that are in the medical literature that nutrition has a role in. There was a study published in the Journal of Europace in June that talked about weight loss and atrial fibrillation. And I've had people email me and it's like, does plant-based diet help with arrhythmias? And there really hasn't been a lot of studies looking at arrhythmias and plant-based nutrition. Certainly, there's been reports here and there that people that have adopted a whole food plant-based diet have had less palpitations for whatever reason, but not a study until now. And this study looked at weight loss, and it was a 355 obese individuals that underwent, they were told to lose weight, mainly through portion control, low-fat diet. And those people that lost 10% of their body mass, or 10% weight loss, had either elimination or marked decrease in the episodes of atrial fibrillation. And there were, out of the 355 people, there were 135 people that lost 10% of their body weight. And 88% of those were either atrial fibrillation free or went from chronic atrial fibrillation to what we call paroxysmal atrial fibrillation. And if they only lost 3% of their body weight, they actually got worse and went from paroxysmal atrial fibrillation to a higher incident of persistent in atrial fibrillation. So what is persistent and what's paradoxical? So atrial fibrillation is an arrhythmia of the top chamber of the heart. The impulse of the heart usually starts up in the top of the, in the atrial chambers at the sinus node, but occasionally there'll be what we call short circuits where there's this reentrant type of, you know, little circles of stimulation, and the actual top chamber starts to beat at around 300, 350 times a minute, and it shoots all these impulses towards the middle or the AV node portion of the electrical system. And if that can conduct through, then there's a beat. So oftentimes people with, you know, especially younger people that have good conduction through that AV node can have heart rates 160, 180 beats a minute and can be very uncomfortable. It's kind of like if your car or you have some sort of an engine that all of a sudden the spark plug wasn't, it was misfiring. So people notice that they're just, you know, they're short of breath with things that they didn't get short of breath, or they're just not quite right. They don't have the energy. Women feel palpitations on a regular heartbeat more than men because of the thick chest wall, that men have more of a bigger chest, barreled chest type of situation. Oftentimes they don't feel it, especially people that are more overweight don't feel the beats. The palpitations, they just feel bad. Sometimes people get chest pain or short of breath. Sometimes people can even go into heart failure when this atrial fibrillation is more prolonged and they don't know it and it lasts for a period of time. A lot of times it'll happen and people have to go to the emergency room. Either they'll spontaneously go back into a regular rhythm, or they have to be electrically converted or medically converted with IV medications. And then it doesn't happen again for a year. Sometimes it happens on and off. Sometimes it gets to the point where people have it continuously, or what we call chronic atrial fibrillation. So when it's on and off, we call it paroxysmal atrial fibrillation. Now, to note, the worst part about atrial fibrillation, it is the most common arrhythmia that humans get. And it is associated with valvular heart disease, hypertension, being overweight, lung disease, sleep apnea, sometimes pneumonias, or again, infection or inflammation in the chest can set it off. And as a medical profession, it's like, okay, you have atrial fibrillation. Now we just treat it. So we control the rhythm. We control the rate. Sometimes we try to get people back in a regular rhythm, again, through the medications or electrical conversion. The biggest risk is that of a stroke because the top chamber is not beating in sync. It's just quivering. There's a risk of blood clots forming in the top chamber of the heart. And those blood clots can actually go through the heart and be sent out through the aorta. aorta, and typically the path of least resistance is to the brain. So atrial fibrillation is a cause of strokes in people, and sometimes, unfortunately, people present with a stroke. They didn't know they had the arrhythmia, and that's very unfortunate. So we put these people that have atrial fibrillation on blood thinners to prevent the blood clot from forming. So again, typically we have this regimen. We put people on blood thinners and we control the rate with medications, and it becomes part of life. There are procedures to do ablations on these rhythms now where there's electrical freezing or burning of those pathways to get that to go away, but there's still the risk of a stroke burden. So people tend to be, after a while, depending on the risk factors, chronically on blood thinners with all the associated side effects of blood thinners. You know, if you fall down and hit your head, it's a risk. If you're in an automobile accident, it's a risk. If you cut yourself, it's a risk. So we like people not to have this, but, you know, other than, you know, avoiding high blood pressure, avoiding obesity, avoiding some of these, you know, lifestyle diseases, typically people present, especially to a cardiologist, they present with these lifestyle diseases and the atrial fibrillation. So it's a little bit late to turn back the clock, or so we thought. So this is actually very encouraging that people that have atrial fibrillation, it can even be chronic, that are overweight, that lose weight, actually do better with their atrial fibrillation. So I mean, that's really, really exciting that we have something to, you know, help these people. You know, it's one thing to get people to get, you know, you should become plant-based because you have high blood pressure, you have sleep apnea. And in sleep apnea, patients are always told, you know, if you lose weight, you can get rid of your sleep apnea, but it really, you know, that's where it kind of ends. I know a pulmonologist in town says, lose weight any way you can to make this better. But obviously, you know, our, you know, in my office, we try to get people to get their weight under control by means of a plant-based diet, and it helps everything. So the whole food plant-based diet, you can see, would even potentially be more helpful because we're eating the green vegetables that produce nitric oxide, so the heart is getting more blood flow, the coronary artery disease is getting better, your peripheral blood flow is improved, so your body's more efficient. Lung function is better eating whole food plant-based diet, especially beets and kale, the 6-minute walk test with chronic obstructive lung disease. So you can see how all of that could potentially help with atrial fibrillation. So it's a really exciting news. I mean, it's a small study, obviously, but it's, again, another reason to, you know, get the weight under control. But mainly, you know, with the plant-based diet, we're specifically targeting increasing nutrient density, increasing nitric oxide production, so that we know how the plant-based nutrition works and how it might help atrial fibrillation now. So that was very, very exciting. I gave a talk for the cardiac rehab folks this week, and a question came up about lectins. There's a book called The Plant Paradox by Dr. Stephen Gundry, who was a cardiothoracic surgeon, and he talks about needing to avoid lectins. And, of course, he also sells supplements, so that should be the biggest red flag that comes up. But, you know, lectins, gluten is part of the lectin family. It's a protein that binds carbohydrates, and it's found in, you know, a multitude of things. Wheat is the one that comes up, but also beans. That's the, you know, so people say, oh, we shouldn't eat beans. But it's also in a lot of fruits, vegetables, potatoes, tomatoes, you know, barleys. And so it's in everything that is traditionally been found to be good. The thing that kind of got this lectin thing going was that there are some potential allergens and some genetic modification of things like tomatoes have selected for some of these allergens that kind of can trigger the, you know, kind of set up the perfect storm to change the gut mucosa. And, you know, this some of these allergens that have been introduced in some of the transgenic tomatoes to prevent fungal disease. They've been there. And so all this stuff is coming up that, you know, well, things have been changed and it's not like it used to be. And so lectins are bad. First of all, you know, there are many studies done in this era besides, you know, looking back at the blue zones that show that eating whole wheat is decreases cardiovascular disease. Certainly nuts and seeds, you know, have not been, shown to be sources of good omega-3s, tomatoes, are, again, blue zones. And if you want to look at the foods that are one of the most popular foods in the blue zones where people live to be 100 and do really well, tomatoes and beans and whole grains. And you can look at all the other studies, too, that, you know, the more recent studies, Seventh-day Adventist studies, and even the Mediterranean diet, you know, again, tomatoes and beans are part of that diet, and people do better. So to say that this is the ultimate cause of cardiovascular disease and the disease is pretty... pretty sketchy. There's a great article, if you look at nutritionstudies.org by Dr. Campbell, that looks at, you know, even the references in this book that are really, if you go actually go to the references, they're not as they seem as far as what they're actually pointing to. It just makes it, you know, again, goes back to the whole part that all these books that are out there to sell either a product or to sell, you know, somebody's version, don't have a lot of good science behind them. So you really have to research them besides just seeing a doctor's name on the book. You can't trust every doctor that you come across. There's plenty of TV ones that we wouldn't trust now, isn't there? But the reality of it is, if you even look at people that lived in countries where there was a low incidence of heart disease, and then they moved to the United States where they adopted a standard American diet, their health got worse eating, you know, a standard American diet when they left their high fiber beans and grains diet of where they were and potatoes. So there's just not much to go on. And there's the theory, you know, that the mucosa in the gut gets changed and then you have a leaky gut. I mean, you can, you know, you can kind of see how you could piece a story like that together. But there's a lot more that affects your microbes than taking in lectins from beans. So, we still know that there's a lot of data that eating a high fiber diet when it comes, you know, which includes whole grains, nuts and seeds and beans and vegetables, select for gut microbes that are much more beneficial. So I would not hang my hat on avoiding lectin and would encourage everybody to get their beans in. Just like Addie said early on, it's a wonderful source of nutrients, fiber, protein, and a whole host of omega-3 fatty acids. So eat your beans, eat your tomatoes, potatoes, whole grains, your fruits and vegetables, and don't worry about getting lectin poisoning. So I'm going to end it there today. I hope you all have a good weekend. I hope you're out doing something exciting, moving your body, eating a variety of fruits and vegetables. If you have the opportunity to try mangoes, they're in season here in Florida. I'm sure they're everywhere in the United States if you can get a hold of some. So eat mangoes, eat your cherries, go for the organic cherries because they typically can be high in pesticides. Eat your watermelon. You don't have to eat an organic watermelon. It doesn't penetrate the rind. And enjoy your week. Talk to you next week. And exciting, one last thing. Going to have a great interview with two neurologists talking about dementia. So tune in next week for a great interview. See you then.